When the tape ended, we were talking about remote sensing and the NASA grant that Dr. Manderscheid was working on. And I think the years that you mentioned were 1972 to 1976.
Correct.
When that was. After the initial contact, did you continue with that area as a scholarly research or not?
I was involved with several conferences, but that kind of research takes bigger money than most ag econ departments have.
Mm-hmm.
And since we concluded that it was not economically feasible to replace USDA's crop reporting service, NASA wasn't interested in putting big bucks in.
I see.
They shifted to an emphasis on larger fields and things that the CIA was interested in.
I see.
Which I couldn't participate in.
I understand. The when we were talking about your now, let's go back to when you were chair. What point did you retire?
I was chair 87 to 92.
92.
And then
did you go back to teaching?
Officially, I went back to teaching and working with students.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I decided that I was 62 and I wasn't going to get a research program of my own underway that could really produce some things, so mm-hmm. I continued to work a lot with students and do teaching. And then in 93, the university came out with, we need to reduce faculty in some areas. If you are interested in making a proposal, and if you can get the support of your chair and dean, you can retire for one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then go back on the payroll. Legally, they had to retire you for one day.
I see.
And then you could start drawing retirement benefits if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I went in with a proposal to retire July 1, 94. And then that day. And then July 2nd, I went on a part-time appointment with a phasing out, saying I would try to be out of the department by the time I reached 65. I was kept on in the department for an extra 3 months to fill in for somebody on sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
But officially I've been out of the department in terms of faculty status since 96.
Mm-hmm.
I've helped on some special assignments for the department chair, but those have not been in a faculty role.
Mm-hmm.
As you may know, Agcol had a wing which was settling, and the university finally agreed that it was time to take that wing off and replace it.
Mm-hmm. And that was on the east side?
East side.
Mm-hmm.
And the chair asked if I would, on an hourly basis, work with him and in terms of construction and avoiding as many problems as we could avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, with a couple of conditions. One, I do not discuss office assignments with anyone.
That can be a tough, tricky situation.
And two, I do not make any budget decisions. I report to you and you decide whether or not you want to spend the money.
Mm-hmm. And what state is the project now?
Right now they're in sort of the cleanup stage. Mm-hmm. They're finishing the parking, putting in the sidewalks. The building is occupied, the interior is finished.
I know that the situation of the fire that occurred in January of this year, affected you.
December 31st.
That's right. Get my dates right. December 31st, 1999. What can you tell us about that? Were your office involved?
I was first told about it at the New Year's Eve party in Orlando. We were down there for the Citrus Bowl, and I saw Vice President Poston and his wife, and we chatted briefly, and he said, "You're going to have some unpleasant news." So the fire started in the Institute of International Ag, and it's gone to the roof. And I said, "Well, my office is between the Institute and the roof." And he said, "Well, I can't tell you how much damage there is, but Larry Hamm, your department chair, is on the scene, and it's under control now." And so when I came back, I found they had a lot of smoke damage, some water damage, but no significant losses of materials or anything, just a lot of time lost in moving to Will's house and trying to set up over there. And now in the next month or two, we'll be moving back. They're working on repairing the damage still. They keep finding new damage because of the water.
They went into areas they didn't anticipate?
Right. And it soaked under carpets, and now they're finding health problems from mildew and molds. And so they're having to take out floors and subfloor, carpeting, and then the floor and the subfloor. And
the water migrated.
Yes.
But some of the research that you had done over the last 30 years, it was still there?
Yes. What I had that was water soaked was put in the freezer over at Stores by the university. And after several months there, it had pretty well freeze dried. So that there was very, it was quite usable when you got it out.
Would you talk a little bit about involvement, any involvement that you had in academic governance?
I had a fair amount over the years. I was involved in department. I was involved in the college as chair of the curriculum committee and some other things. At the university level, which is probably your main focus, I was elected to the Educational Policies Committee and served on it 1970 to 1973, chaired it for a while, chaired the subcommittee that made the recommendation to give up half of Channel 10 in exchange for enough cash to put Channel 23 on the air in color, which was a board decision, but we pushed the board to go that way. Served on the tenure committee.
At the university?
At the university. University Faculty Tenure Committee. I was a member of that committee when the first recommendation for dismissal from a faculty committee went forward, which was a time-consuming and not a task you ask for. It was a dismissal for cause. I served as chair of an ad hoc committee to review academic governance. And that is a group that basically rewrote the bylaws, many of which we still operate under. It was a small committee. We worked over the summer, basically, and in the fall went back to academic council and started trying to sell the ideas. Mm-hmm. And then after we sold the concepts, we then had to reconvene as a committee and write bylaw language, mm-hmm. which is a little different than...
A lot of detail work.
A lot of detail work and more of a legalistic document. Mm-hmm. I was elected to the steering committee and served as chair of the steering committee of academic governance for three years as chair, 4 years as a member. And in that role, I was also chair of the so-called executive committee, which included the chairs of the standing committees as well as the steering committee. And when I finished that process, I went to athletic council for 4 years, 1981 to 85. Served as vice chair of that for eligibility. I served on the president's long-range planning council.
It was President Mackey?
Which was started under Wharton.
Okay.
Reported about the time he left. I was on the search committee for the president that had lots of starts and stops, ended up with recommendation of Cecil Mackey. That was a long, involved process. Mm-hmm.
Was it more than a year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Hardin was interim president at that time?
Correct. Right? Mm-hmm. And I served as secretary to the provost selection committee when David Scott was hired. Mm-hmm.
What do you see as any lasting legacy of that extensive commitment that you made to university service? Anything that you can point to? Or
I thought we made some real progress when we revised the bylaws. Not as much as I had hoped, but couple of aspects of that. One, we reduced the number of committees, clarified who was responsible for what. Probably more important, we got the board and administration to accept the idea that there were different levels of participation. And it was important for them to accept it as well as for the faculty to accept it. There is participation where the faculty vote, except under unusual circumstances, is final, delegated authority. And that's primarily in the area of curricular development. Mm-hmm. And then there are things where the faculty role is advisory, and you take votes and advise the appropriate administrator. Mm-hmm. But the administrator considers the vote but is not bound by it. And then there's a less formal mode of consultative where mm-hmm. you sit around and discuss it but you never take a vote.
Are there any committees now that deal with that or still exist in that consultative role?
Many of the advisory committees to the library, mm-hmm. the Dean of International Studies and Programs, mm-hmm. Operate much of the time in a consultative role. Mm-hmm. They're called advisory consultative committees, mm-hmm. so they can take votes, but they try to reach agreement with the administrator without saying, well, it was 13 to 1.
Mm-hmm. One's the administrator. Yeah, I served on the ROTC committee, the Military Education Advisory Committee. So that's one of those. Yeah. What's your advice to a, would your advice be to a new faculty member, or let's assume that they have tenure, should they get involved in university curriculum, or not curriculum, but committee work?
The answer is yes, but I think we have to be selective of our committees. The some committees, like the Committee on Academic Governance, while it can be important, spend an awful lot of time talking about who to appoint to what. Mm-hmm. And you get to read a lot of resumes, but you sometimes wonder how important that committee is, because you tend to get resumes from people who want to do it. Mm-hmm. They have some important assignments or recommendations to make, like athletic council. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are to committees that don't do a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to select a committee that is listened to by an administrator, a committee that considers issues that are important to you and or your department or college. And the committee that is adequately staffed. And by that I mean, is there someone who can make the phone calls, get a report for you, mm-hmm. who is keeping up and can advise you on where you might find the information you're talking about? The big plus is you get to know people from different parts of the campus. You get to understand university decision making. It takes you out of your little enclave. Mm-hmm. And you see that what happens in mathematics may be important to what happens in Ag Econ, mm-hmm. or engineering, probably less so in arts and letters.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk a little bit about your experiences with some of the presidents and provosts? You mentioned John Hanna a little bit. Did you have any other additional contacts with him after that 1956 meeting or reception? What do you remember about President Hanna?
Well, we interacted with him on our Committee on Undergraduate Education.
Okay.
I was at the State of the University address that he gave as he was leaving for his Washington assignment. Mm-hmm. And I remember the demonstration that was taking place.
Student demonstration?
Canceled reception following that. Mm-hmm. We were in meeting in Fairchild Theater, and Kresge Art was set up to hold the reception. There were so many demonstrators around that the decision was made to lock Kresge, mm-hmm. and avoid damage to art objects. Mm-hmm. You could hear the doors to Fairchild were locked in the sense that you couldn't come in from outside, mm-hmm. after the speech started. But you could hear the pounding and shouting. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the ceremony, the chair of the steering committee announced that the reception had been canceled, and that we would leave through the auditorium. Fairchild and the auditorium have back-to-back stages. Mm-hmm. And we went out, and there were demonstrators lined up, and they apparently had been told that they had to maintain a 3-foot walkway. Mm-hmm. or they would be arrested.
Sounds like a gauntlet almost.
Yep, it felt that way. Mm-hmm. Hannah would always speak to you if you met him on campus. Mm-hmm. He was always accessible. Jake Neville worked a lot with us on the Q committee.
He was provost.
He was provost at the time. Among the provosts, of course, I knew Larry Boger from the department by the time he got over there. And mm-hmm. I was chair of a university committee at the time, so we interacted. Lee Winder and I interacted a great deal. When John Cantlin was provost, he was selected under Walter Adams. I always considered Walter a good friend. Mm-hmm. And John and I interacted a lot, especially in the early days of Cliff Wharton's administration. As you may recall, Cliff was elected by a 5-3 vote. And we all knew that at any given board meeting, he could be asked to resign. Mm-hmm. And I was on Educational Policies Committee at the time, and I was getting calls directly from trustees. Mm-hmm. And the bylaws of the Board of Trustees clearly state they communicate with the faculty through the president.
Mm-hmm. Not directly to you.
And so I went to John and said, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "You can't refuse a phone call." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But here are some guidelines. Can we agree on these? That you don't make any commitments, mm-hmm. and you will keep us briefed on what they're talking to you about. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the board at the, so President Wharton faced a very critical board or a vocal minority.
At least a vocal minority, mm-hmm. and there were some very delicate issues being discussed. The day we met with the board to present our report on Channel 10, Channel 23, mm-hmm. We were invited to be there at breakfast time. At that time, the meetings were not open. We were invited to go over to the boardroom with them and observe the meeting and then come back and have lunch, make our report over lunch. Mm-hmm. When we got in the room for lunch, President Wharton said, some of you have been critical of the way we've been handling some demonstrations on campus. I've asked Dick Burnett, head of DPS, to brief me in front of the rest of you, just as he would brief me in the office at this time. And he gave his briefing, an estimated number of people in Dem Hall, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they opened it up for questions, and like how long would it take for the state police to get here? And Dick's response was something like, so many people could be here in such and such time, but you have to remember that within 10 seconds of the call going out, the demonstrators will know it's gone out because they're monitoring the state police radio.
So, and the headquarters wasn't far and away either.
So that was an interesting time. Mm-hmm. But then I was involved in hiring Cecil Mackey. He and Claire were married in Northern Illinois. On the same day, Dorothy and I were married in Northern Illinois. Mm-hmm. So coincidences occur. And I had less interaction with DiBiagio. wasn't as involved with governance issues.
Mm-hmm. And what was your, were you just on the search committee, or did you chair?
I was on the search committee that brought Cecil in.
Okay.
I was not involved with the hiring of DiBiagio.
Uh-huh.
I was involved in, as a staff person in hiring Scott.
Okay.
I had a lot of interaction with Lee Winder over the years. He was a member of the committee that rewrote the bylaws. We were neighbors geographically. And let's see, Gordon Geyer is interim president. He had come out of the College of Ag. I'd known him since shortly after arriving at MSU.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a lot of interaction while he was president. But, and I happened to be filling in for Henry Silverman as Secretary for Academic Governance while Henry was on sabbatic at the time. Peter McPherson took over and brought Luann in. So I had several academic council meetings where I sat on one side of Peter,
mm-hmm.
plus several other governance issues where we were in meetings, never one on, I don't think we were ever one on one, but
mm-hmm.
3 to 4 people, up to 20 or 30 people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned that I think previously in our discussions on either on the phone or whatever, that you had maintained a friendship with the Whartons?
Yes.
That went back to the time that they were here?
Yes. Or
did you have professional contact? He was with him, or as an economist or ag economist?
Yes, I first met him when he was still with, I think it was Rockefeller Foundation.
Okay.
And he was organizing a conference at Stanford University on some economic development issues. And I had sent some ideas in the air about an issue of measurement. And I don't know who decided that Cliff would call and ask me to present those ideas at the conference.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then he's spoken a number of times at the American Agricultural Economics Association meetings. He was elected a fellow of that group.
So he was well known in his field?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember at all how his name came up for president of the university? Were you involved in that in any way?
I was involved at the far fringe.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
A friend of mine was on the committee, but things were much quieter then. As I recall the history, there was a big push on the part of some people in the state, primarily of one party, to name Walter Adams. There were some others from the other party that thought Jack Breslin should be the next president. And we got into some interesting exchanges and so on. And when Cliff's name got to top of the pile, I'm not sure. I just know that mm-hmm. at some point he was presented as the recommendation of the search committee and was accepted by the board.
Mm-hmm. So you had some positive things to say about his work or to the committee or?
Well, I was positive in terms of my relationships with him professionally mm-hmm. and as a person.
Mm-hmm. So he wasn't a total unknown in terms of
correct
when the committee here.
No, what was unknown was how good a president he would be of a large organization as opposed to a person who had great diplomatic skills and great intellect.
Mm-hmm. How the difficulties or the thing? How would you assess the problems that he faced in the, here at the university in the post Hanna years?
There were a number of problems. One, we had the Vietnam episode going on, mm-hmm. which led to a great deal of activity, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. The need to decide on dismissing classes for a long weekend, hoping that some of the demonstrators would be talked to by their parents. Trying to maintain the campus as a place for open dialogue, not allowing any group to shut the place down. The narrow vote of the board as he came in meant that he was always looking over his shoulder to see who was might be wavering. There were great concerns about, I think it was lettuce at that time, and farm workers. One of the more interesting episodes in a board meeting, which I did not personally witness, but a friend told me about, was the impassioned speeches about the need to support farm workers and that the university should not serve these products in the dormitories and mm-hmm. Kellogg Center and other places. And